Wes Anderson using title
card. That's true.
Are we sure this episode wasn't directed by Wes Anderson?
I'm not sure that it was. Is all I'll say.
I don't know that it was, but I don't know that it wasn't.
When I'm torrenting old recordings, internet, it sends a warning, and I don't think it'll download in time. By the time I've watched the show, it's half, it's time to go. Chugging one more swig to make the show sit right. It's alright, I watched it saved by the drugs. Alright, is it saved by the what the hell? I watched it saved by the bell.
Hello and welcome to Saved by the Bell Reviewed, the podcast. The podcast reviewing every episode of Saved by the Bell. I am Austin Gorton.
I'm David Bitsenoffer.
I'm Carolyn Maim.
And I am Ryan Alexander Tanner.
And tonight we are discussing Season 1, Episode 12, The Mamas and the Papas. This is the episode where the Golden Six get paired off and have to pretend to be married to one another for a social studies class that everyone else in the class gets to just watch them perform throughout this whole charade. And needless to say, all kinds of wacky gender roles are discussed, and Slater is more misogynistic than ever, and Zach's a horn dog, and good times are had by all. So the episode opens...
Well, before we get started,
okay.
I've got some even free... First of all, I'd like to say the title, The Mamas and the Papas, another very timely reference by Saved by the Bell.
For all those kids who are big fans of The Mamas and the Papas.
California dreaming indeed. Secondly, an episode like this makes me very appreciative that we have a female presence on our podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Because I'm sure a lot of people, if you've seen this episode, probably think Slater's a bit over the top or even, dare I say, misogynistic. But luckily, I'm sure Carolyn will tell us why Slater is the type of man women really want and why his attitude is what's best, not just for women, but for society as a whole.
I know you're doing parody, but actually Slater doesn't freak me out as much as Screech does. I don't want to get too timely, but there's a real nerd misogyny backlash happening right now. And Screech is fucking terrifying in this episode.
You're just saying if Screech is still a virgin when he's 22, something might happen.
I saw it go very dark.
One thing I wanted to bring up, too, that I thought was very odd in this episode, that is only ever done in this episode, is there's these weird... like chapter titles that appear on screen. It starts with the first one is the wedding, and then there's more as it goes. There's the firstborn, the surprise, the anniversary dinner.
But that's
very odd and out of place.
Yeah, it is. It's kind of this weird technique that they use for. They use it here and they never use it again. And I'm not even sure like what it was supposed to be adding here.
Was this like supposed to be like a parody or homage to something that?
It kind of predates Wes Anderson using title cards.
That's true.
Are we sure this episode wasn't directed by Wes Anderson?
I'm not sure that it wasn't, is all I'll say.
I don't know that it was, but I don't know that it wasn't.
I don't know for a fact that it wasn't, is all I'll say.
It was probably Wes Anderson's sleazy Hollywood dad or grandpa.
Yeah, I can see that.
Or it's his inspiration.
Yeah, well, it's an inspiration for millions. That's undeniable. But yeah, and like you pointed out, it's really extra weird. I think maybe it's the first case of it being, I can get with these six kids are the most popular kids and the most shit happens to them. But this is the first case, I think, where it's just totally standout bizarre that these six kids are the only ones doing this thing in this class. Everyone has to sit and passively stare at them.
They don't get to sit. They're not in seats. They're standing against the blackboard.
Yeah, and it's like, couldn't they have put all the other kids in, like, matching shit, too, and just we'll assume that we don't hear about them? The other thing that's great is when Mr. Belding comes in, who's just going to be teaching this project. Even, I think it's Zach, is like, what are you doing here? Mm-hmm. Like, at least they acknowledge how fucking weird and esoteric it is that Mr. Belding is in charge of this project.
Yeah, no, going back to the six of them being the focus of this, like, in the Buddy Bands episode, you see, like, their group, and you see a couple of other groups, and you could reasonably assume that, like, there are additional groups that make presentations, and we just aren't watching that because those aren't the characters that we're watching on the show. But this, you're right, this one, they straight up, like, the Golden Six are theater, and everybody else is watching them.
And as Ryan pointed out, it would have been very easy for production just to get those, like, blue and red...
smocks?
Yeah.
Yeah.
pullovers to just give them to the extras in the background, and if they're wearing them, you just assume you're just not seeing their part of this class. But
I gotta say, so the smocks, they come in and they
they're more like bike safety.
They're like pennies, I think, is what they call them in gym.
They're like screen printed tank tops, and they name the couples in ascending order, or is it descending? Golden Six. Zach and Kelly are husband wife number one, and then Slater and Jesse are husband wife number two. Yeah. And who is Poland in third?
It's true, they ranked them.
They ranked them. They
they just straight up ranked them.
Yeah, and that's what we all thought, right? If we were forced to put in rank, that's how we'd rank.
Well, it should have been like couple one, couple two, and then like the leftover couple.
Well, and I love. Okay, so we're getting a little bit ahead of ourselves
should
here.
Should we set up the
scene?
Okay,
let's go. We'll set up the scene. So it opens with, as Ryan said, the wedding superimposed underneath with a little like twinkle music.
So weird.
And it opens with the Golden Six walking down the aisle. And Zach turns and tells the audience that as part of a social science project, he gets to marry Kelly. And, of course, he's excited about the homework, at which point his eyebrows basically graze the ceiling. And then Belding comes...
His homework is to fuck Kelly.
Yeah, which, like, greatest class ever, am I right?
Yeah, pretty good.
So then Belding comes in, and they make a token effort to explain that their regular teacher has gone off and eloped with the shop teacher.
Where's Tony Crane for this?
Anyway, he must have been busy banging that actress chick.
You know what would have been...
probably eloped together.
Oh, right? Yeah, that she did elope. No. You know what would have made it better, what would have made it more excusable if, like if the paint in the classroom was peeling, and so Belding had to come in and fix the paint faults, and then he was like, oh, as long as I'm here, I'll run this other thing. I'll run this activity, too.
As long as I'm here, I'm going to marry the Golden Six together.
This isn't even a sanctioned school project. This is just Belding fucking with their lives.
And when Mr. Belding shows up, Zach says, you know, what are you doing here? And Mr. Belding says, I'm here to marry you. And Zach says, but you're not my type.
Mr. Belding, what are you doing here?
I'm here to marry you.
Well, you're not my type.
Button it, Zach, or you'll be honeymooning in detention.
Button it, sir.
Waka waka.
Well, and then Belding immediately gets pissed at him and is like, watch your mouth or you're going to detention. And it wasn't even that bad a joke. It's the kind of joke he would give your teacher.
Well, Belding is all about being loved and finding love from the students. So any kind of implication that he's not accepted or a high priority, it's hurtful to him.
So and the fact that...
His response to that hurt is punishment.
So he couldn't just handle the joke that Zach would not want to marry him. He can't accept that?
No, he wants Zach to want to marry him.
How dare you say I'm not your type, Zach Morris?
Yeah. Belding's, the student's opinion of Belding is very important to Belding.
I guess. Can't even take a joke about it.
He doesn't know any adults.
Just terrible testaverde.
He never leaves the school.
Have any of you ever needed to do this for school?
No, it's not a thing, no.
Because I feel like this is something that a lot of TV, like school TV shows do, like the fake marriage.
Yeah, or even like the fake baby thing, which
I've seen the flour sack baby. We didn't do it in my school, but like my friends went to a middle school where they did that.
No, we never did.
But
somebody made cookies out of his flour baby afterwards.
Oh, that's horrible.
It was awesome.
Flower baby cookie party. But no, and it's like, what are they even supposed to be learning? It's like,
communication.
And also, like, Jack's whole thing is he just wants to make out with Kelly in front of everyone. And then Jesse and Slater just want to treat each other like shit.
Well, see, the thing is, like, apparently, you know, this class, this project is about learning how to compromise and get along with each other. And really, how hard would it be to fake it just to get the A?
Right, that's, yeah, totally. Well, and then Austin is the only one of us that's married, right?
Yes.
Yes.
So we're going to have questions for you as we go.
Okay. In the same way that Carol is the token girl, I'm going to be the token married guy?
The married guy, yeah.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if Vince was married.
I have some experience with marriage, but I am not.
Deep. We just learned a lot.
The divorce
yeah. When they have the divorce episode.
Yeah, well.
So that's right, ladies. He's single.
Yeah.
Ignoring that. That's not an issue.
No, I'm really sorry to hear that.
Hey, it's all right. I'm over it.
The thing about the kids all being forced to marry each other, it's like pretty much a shotgun wedding, and I'm surprised Belding isn't putting them into a locker to go finger bang each other. Like, it's so much coercion, and I've never seen this plot in another TV show. I've seen the flower babies, and it's just so weird.
Well, and it's just they don't really seem to... No, it's true that they could just easily do the simulations, but they're so unwilling to break their own character. It's one of those things where TV is so vain, that they're supposed to be learning something and get this sort of very vain illusion that they are, but even that in itself is very strained and one-dimensional. I just don't understand what they're actually trying to do. Other than that, it's kind of a funny scenario to put the characters through. In terms of it being an academic thing, it doesn't ever make any sense.
Yeah, you think it would be the easiest fucking A in the world.
Yeah, you just... Say yes. I don't know.
Kelly wrecked my Ferrari. Oh, sorry, honey. I hope you're okay. Like, who cares what you would actually react? It doesn't matter. Just fake it for your A.
You know, I'm Slater. I'm a misogynist, but Jesse doesn't want to take my name. Whatever.
You're not actually married, guys. So let's talk about the fact that Belding bullshits that this is all paired up alphabetically when that's clearly not the case, because the last time I checked, P and T are both not next to each other, and also on either side of the other S's.
Wait, let's go through
break
this.
Down.
Yeah, break it down, because I thought about it for a minute.
Yeah, I got it.
Because you have Zach Morris and Kelly Kapowski, so KLM.
So you're okay there.
And then Slater and Spano.
And that seems okay.
And then Turtle and Powers. So Slater should be married to Lisa.
Yes. Right. Slater should be married to Lisa, and Jesse and Screech should be together.
Yeah, Slater.
But you know what? That they can't because of racism.
Are you suggesting that the combined Italian power and African American power between Slater and Lisa would be too overwhelming?
Yeah, well, I'm still pretty sure that that Screech is Jewish, and that they wanted to put the minorities together, because they have their own alphabet. The other thing that blew my mind, and this is done so casually, and I can't get past it, is Mr. Belling's like, this is only for 5 days, and then the experiment, he called it an experiment, not a project, which is weird. The experiment concludes Friday night at the Max. What? Why? For so many reasons, why does that happen? Why are they at school Friday night, and why are they doing it at the Max?
Because that's the only other set they have? I don't know.
I know, but...
And then this is where it's like, they get like a free meal at the Max, now we're getting way ahead.
Do they get a free meal? I was just wondering, did they have to pay for those burgers?
I don't know.
Lisa was really into the cost.
I just felt bad for the other students not being able to participate in this like Max meal.
Nobody else was standing around
for that. I think they used the money from the buddy bands.
Yeah, maybe. But they just broke even on all that, though.
Wait, sorry, what?
They broke even on the buddy bands, though, because their friendship was more important than profit.
Well, it was the money they made on those cardboard surfboards.
So the nerds who made the money on the cardboard surfboards gave that money to the Golden Six so they could do this project.
I think it's Belding dipping into the school funds.
They had a PTA fundraiser.
I think you hit on it, Ryan, when you pointed out that Belding called it an experiment and not a project, because their lives are just one big experiment to Belding.
And I think it's weird how he calls them school wives. I now pronounce you school wife and school husband. And it felt really cultish to me.
And it makes you wonder, do they have to, like, maintain that ruse outside of that class?
Screech thought so, and no wonder this leads to confusing overlaps.
That's true. But Screech was just taking a ball, and he was running with it as far as he could.
Yeah.
Creepily so.
Totally creepily so. So that's our next scene. We're at the Max. And this is after the school wedding ceremony. And the gang is basically just sitting around discussing the project and their views on marriage, and Slater's a pig and Jesse's a feminist and all
that. Like, now that we're married, let's all just sit around and eat hamburgers. It's like we always do.
And then Max brings up a cake and Screech pops out of it and Lisa gets a twitch.
Well, I'd like to point out that at least Zach is one of the people... few men I know that sees the appeal of being a stay-at-home dad.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm into that. I would be up for that.
I have repeatedly told my wife that I would happily be a stay-at-home dad.
What does your wife do?
She's a veterinary technician.
Oh, man.
So I keep telling her to start making that big vet tech money so that I can be a stay-at-home dad.
Does she make more money than you?
No, she does not.
So
that's going to be a problem someday.
Any of us have kids?
Nope.
No. I was trying to think of a funny response.
Not that I'm willing to
something that...
take responsibility for.
Yeah. Nothing you want to be on the record as having.
Yeah.
None I took in test for. We'll put it that way.
By the authority of this podcast, no. No, I don't have kids.
So needless to say, yes.
I use the pull-out method.
You use the you can't get pregnant if you have sex in a hot tub method.
Well, see, I got this note, and I don't. Apparently, Kelly doesn't mind being Zach's possession, though, is what I gathered from this, though.
Pretty much, yeah.
Well, that's what's interesting is that Slater and Jesse have this sort of ultra conflicted. Yeah. Well, it's like he's like the shittiest asshole of a man, and then she's like the most. They're both these extremes. I mean, obviously, I'm more on her side than his. Because he's such a fucking asshole, it's unbelievable. And she's like, I have aspirations. And he's like, make me a fucking sandwich or I'll punch you in the teeth. But,
he has
a great line, too, where she goes, you macho pig. And he says, oink, oink, baby, which is a really good line. Or it's like, I'm not going to take your last name. And he's like, this chick's crazy.
I know, I love how they act as though the very concept of a woman not taking the husband's last name is the most insane shit in the entire world. Like, you're a fucking cuckoo bananas for not doing that.
And I will say, though, as a person who has two last names, as a result of a woman refusing to take her husband's last name, which makes sense, this is my belief. If you feel that strongly about it, just give the kids the mom's last name. Because every time I go to a bar and you pay with your card, they go, what's your last name? And you say, Alexander Tanner. And they say, no, just what's your last name? And I say, it's Alexander Tanner. And they're like, idiot, you can't just tell me his last name. What is your last name? And so I already have this fucking long last name. And then you have to go, they go, what's your last name? You say, I have a hyphenated last name. It's Alexander Tanner. So instead of just having two last names, you have a whole fucking sentence that you have to say.
Well, I think your problem is one of the last names is also a first name.
No, I know.
If you were like Johnson Tanner, it probably wouldn't be a problem.
Or like Malevich Tanner.
I like people just having one last name and the woman keeping her name, but every time I say to a dude, let's flip, and the child gets that last name, they're like, no, that's where the property line gets. Really
yeah, no, I before my wife and I got married, I basically told her, I'm not willing to change my name, so I don't think it's fair that you would have to change yours, so that's totally up to you. If you want to take my name, great. If you want to keep yours, that's fine. My only thing is, let's pick one or the other, and that would be our kid's name.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It should have been an epic coin toss, though, for that.
You guys should have gotten greased up and wrestled over it. No, but for me, I mean, if I ever fucking...
For the honeymoon.
The winner of the honeymoon names the kid.
I want to watch that movie on Lifetime.
The honeymoon tournament. If I ever have a kid I'm willing to take care of, I'm going to give him the woman's last name. Because this shit is a pain in the ass. That's all I'm saying.
It's already soiled. You can't put a third on Ryan Alexander Tanner.
Well, the other thing, too, is like it sounds arrogant to people if you tell them your long two last names. Like, whoa, what? I got to say all that shit. You're like, it's my fucking name. It's out of my hands.
Okay, C. Thurston Howell III.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah, it's like that. So how far off topic are we?
Well, I want to get back to Slater for a moment because the thing about him in this episode, it's like, you can have a sitcom and you can have your kind of macho, misogynistic character if you want, and there you can get some humor out of it if you do it right, we'll put it that way. But the biggest problem with this episode is they never actually point out that Slater's wrong. It's almost like, oh, it's just a difference of opinion.
Right, that's the thing, because they have this thing of, like, Jesse's one way and Slater's another way, and that, oh, they're so different. And they're both extremes.
Yes.
But Jesse is, like, there's at least a reason for it. It's, Jesse actually seems to exist as a response to the way Slater is.
Yes.
Like, that's the reason why Jesse is so pushy in her beliefs. But Slater's just a piece of shit.
Yeah, you can have a piece of shit character on your sitcom, but people have to call him a piece of shit every once in a while.
Right.
Isn't yeah. this the first time she's been, like, super feminist? I think it was a response to the plot.
I think she's been pretty feminist.
This is certainly the most feminist she's ever been. It's not the first time she's been that way, but, like, she amps it up in this episode.
Oh, but what I was going to say is the other thing about it, when you're seeing these different relationships, yeah, it's because Kelly's like, yeah, I'm old-fashioned, I'll take Zach's last name, and I'm going to stay home and have babies. And that's a really weird contrast, too. And Kelly's supposed to be, like, the perfect girl. And she's so, like, complacent and...
Yeah, there's this the subtle implication that the perfect girl is the docile, stay-at-home, does-whatever-the-husband-says kind of girl. And
yeah.
School wife number one.
That's school wife number one.
Exactly. Do you
she's
think,
not number two.
Talking about this, you really kind of get the sense that in, like, Slater and Kelly probably would be the better match. Because then she could just cook for him and pop out babies. Whereas Jesse and Zach wouldn't be that bad because she could go be a lawyer and Zach could just be the lazy stay-at-home dad.
Yeah.
Now...
Still leaving the minorities together.
Right, still leaving the minorities together.
Yeah.
But that's not who Belding wanted to see fuck.
Yeah. Right.
That's not how the alphabet worked, man.
And so I guess what I'm wondering is that... That sort of parallel, hey, they should actually switch each other, a subtle commentary, or just a complete fucking accident?
Accident.
Yeah, I kind of knew
what
the
show
answer.
Are we talking
I
about?
I kind of knew the answer to that before I asked it.
And Zach would never be happy without anybody but Kelly.
That's true.
That. Like,
that's
he
true.
Needs to get everything he wants, and he generally does. So.
Going back to the Max, so everybody's sitting around, and Kelly has this line, and she is the number one school wife, and she says, I think a pretend marriage is a great way to learn about life. Which actually I think is how Michael Jackson proposed to Lisa Marie.
I love, you know, when you single it out like that, that line's just like patently ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I think a pretend marriage is a great way to learn about real life.
That reference was almost as timely as the title of this episode.
Yeah.
Hey guys, remember when River Phoenix died?
Yeah. Father knows best.
Right to the moon.
All
right,
so we kind of glossed.
There's another one. There's a Ralph Cramden one. In this one.
We kind of glossed over Screech popping out of a cake, though, and the time and dedication that must have went into that little trick.
Yeah.
Well, Max is really up for. If you have some elaborate entrance, that's probably expensive. Max will support you wholeheartedly.
Max all about just showing off his magic. Well,
I'm
putting quotes up for magic.
Max is second only to Belding in wanting to facilitate these kids fucking.
Just think of my restaurant as the classroom. Mm. He says that later.
He says that at the end. Wait, we're going to get to that.
We'll get there. Yeah. He's just that open.
He just likes it when people pop out of things. Whether it's a duck,
or
Lisa,
or
Screech, whatever. He loves it.
Just loves it.
Yep.
He's got a flair for the dramatic.
Yeah. No, there's a line in here, and I forget what the setup to it is. Something about how Zach thinks, you know, kissing can solve everything, and then Jesse says, "Well, that's terrible," and Slater doesn't miss a beat and says, "Not the way I do it, peach cake."
Zach, what do you think is the most important thing about a marriage?
That's easy. Kissing.
That's terrible.
Not the way I do it, peach cake.
It was just like the epitome of sexist Slater for me.
Well, and then he reaches over and he grabs the back of her head and he starts pushing it down towards his crotch. I was like, this is a Saturday morning show. Kissing solves every problem.
So after the Max, we cut to Lisa's room and she's doing some aerobics in front of her hilariously large portable TV. And Screech decides he's going to stop in and, not surprisingly at all, fails to respect her boundaries.
This is an aside. This really has nothing to do with anything, but it reminded me of it. And I had to share it. I had this roommate one time who had this huge VHS collection, and one time he came into my room and he was like, "Oh, I found this. You got to see this." And it was like Alyssa Milano's teen workout video.
Okay.
And he was basically not subtly like, "Here, I know that you would like to jerk off to this." And he was like, "I'm just gonna leave this with you." And I was like, I don't want to. She's like 15 in this video.
Yeah.
It was really disturbing. I don't know. That's all. Maybe we can just edit all that out. But it was a workout video.
I feel like
so
you're trying to like
Ryan's saying
cleanse
is that
yourself.
In tight spandex in this scene, and it called him a softcore pornographic memory.
Yeah. Well, I just want to say for the record, I never watched the Alyssa Milano workout video. I didn't watch it.
Well, you know, yeah. It was him who put it in the porno context.
Yeah.
I believe you're a saint, and you would never jerk off to Alyssa Milano except in that vampire titty movie.
I mean, I'm not above a lot of things, but that was too much.
You jerk off to Alyssa Milano, just not 15-year-old Alyssa Milano.
Yeah.
You have standards. So after Screech leaves, Lisa goes to bed and kneels and prays.
We're kind of glossing over this a little.
Okay, what do you want to say about Screech?
Screech comes in and thinks he can just live with Lisa now. What's going on
They're
here?
Married, David. Did you not hear Mr. Belding's sermon?
Isn't Screech supposed to be like the intelligent one of this group?
He's taking a ball and he's running with it. This is the best shot he's got. He's going for it.
Yeah, so he comes in and he's just like, what's up, Lisa? I have my weird tarantulas and shit. I'm going to live here and touch you now. Like a husband touches a wife.
Yeah.
And then she gets him out, which is, she doesn't have her parents. There's no support.
Yeah, well, that's another thing. That's a problem with Saved by the Bell to begin with. Everybody can just walk into anybody's room. Like, he just knocked on her bedroom door. Like, he never had to enter the house.
Yeah, Mr. Call up Ryan. Call up Mr. Turtle and ask him why he let Screech come in.
Right now.
He never even said,
hey. Wouldn't that be great? He let us do that interview in the second episode. What if we just keep calling him up? Hey, so why did this happen in the second episode? Like, I never have watched it. I have no idea.
Let's get Bill Ayers to answer.
We'll get Bill to come back.
That would be great.
Yeah, no, to be clear, it's totally creepy that Screech, that he's basically like, hi, Lisa, let's fuck now, and nobody's stopping
him. For not coming in through the window.
Yeah.
That's true. He was a gentleman. He came through what passes for the front door.
Yeah, but you can only come through the window at Zach's or Jesse's.
True. Everybody else uses the door.
It's the same room!
No, it's not. Ryan, be quiet.
Sorry.
Yeah, no, it's a very disturbing scene, and I think it is something that wouldn't fly in a sitcom today. This is already antiquated, and it's very interesting what 1990 thought about feminism and forced student marriage.
Well, also...
just straight up boundaries.
Yeah, boundaries, thank you.
But then also children praying before they go to bed.
Yeah.
Because you can't do that anymore on TV either.
Yeah, that struck me as like really weird. I was like, hey, look, Lisa's just straight up praying. And I guess it was for the joke about, there was some kind of lame joke in there about how dumb Screech was, but.
Thank you for everything but Screech. Amen.
Yeah. And so it's like, I guess that gag really wasn't worth it, but that's what they were setting up.
And then she has a big doll on her bed, which,
yep.
I don't know, maybe there's going to be something more happening with that, I don't know.
The doll in the bed is where it all starts to go into a horror movie. If you change the musical cue at that point, and for the next whole episode, you can be very frightened, because the footage is about to get disturbing.
And I'm pretty sure that doll is the same creepy-ass doll that Screech danced with in the hallway in the first episode.
Yeah.
And that Zach creepily stroked the hair of when he was bugging Jesse's room.
Yeah, so it was in Jesse's room. So this is like the sisterhood of the traveling doll.
Something like that. Ryan, maybe the logo should be this doll.
People will really recognize it.
And after she prays and gets into bed, she then has a, I guess this is a pink-rimmed nightmare.
Yes.
In which she basically sees Screech's face over everything, including her hunky beefcake poster on the wall.
What do you guys think was the most disturbing superimposed Screech face?
The hunk one, David?
The hunk one.
Because you liked it so much, you were disturbed by it?
No comment?
I'm disturbed by the fact that I can no longer maintain an erection if I'm not looking at the hunky Screech.
It just gave me visions of the Screech porn, because, you know, it's like a face with a superimposed body.
Yeah.
Allegedly.
I can't remember all of them. He was also in the bathroom mirror. He ended on the doll. That's the close image, right?
And did you notice when they ended on the doll, they didn't just superimpose his face on the doll, but it looked like they actually put Dustin Diamond in, like, that blonde Raggedy Ann wig.
Yep, totally.
And he wears one later, so yeah, they have that prop. It checks out.
Yep.
This was an especially embarrassing episode for Dustin Diamond, I would imagine. When I just saw him come in husband number three shirt, getting rejected, and that was before they gave him the doll wig.
Yeah. Talk about putting you in your place in the Saved by the Bell pecking order.
Do you think that was the moment that he had no future?
I think that's the moment that America had no future.
Do you think up until this that moment of his life, things might have worked out?
No.
I don't really believe in fate, except in the case of Dustin Diamond.
I'm just curious. I want to know the moment when Dustin Diamond realized he had no future.
I don't think he's realized it yet.
Yeah, I should have asked him when. When did you realize you had no future?
Also, can you sign my shirt?
Yeah. I was supposed to buy a mug to meet you, but I just weaseled into the line.
After Lisa's Pink Rim Nightmare, we're back in school. We get another little title card that the honeymoon is over.
Yeah.
And where the room has been staged so that it is now what Belding calls a newlywed apartment.
And I must emphasize that it's just the six and then the students around this stage watching.
Exactly.
It's really weird.
So weird.
And first up, we get Jesse and Slater, and Slater's a pig about dinner.
Yeah, this has
He's such an asshole.
This has one of my favorite lines, I think, in history. When Jesse asks him if he's ever heard of the woman's movement, and he said, sure, put on something cute and move it into the kitchen.
Haven't you ever heard of the women's movement?
Well, sure, put on something cute and move it into the kitchen.
Is that why you got divorced?
I don't see what's wrong with this statement. I'd also like to point out that obviously Slater's anti-cooking, yet it was already established in an earlier episode that he's actually a very good cook, so... How about you get his ass in the kitchen and whip up something? He loved it so much.
He won't cook for a woman.
Yeah, he'll cook for the bros. And this is a sign of just the casual misogyny again, because, like, Slater says his line, and, like, all the guys in the background that are watching this are all, like, chuckling and elbowing each other, and like, yeah, that's how it is.
Like, Slater is our role model.
Once again, no one's pointing out that this isn't just a personality trait. This is kind of a dick attitude.
Yeah.
And then when, Jesse says something, it's kind of just like crickets, right?
Yeah.
Nobody laughs because it's not a joke, but no one just like, woo, because they don't feel it. It's just out there, like, dead.
She's like a shrill harpy, you know, trying to ruin everyone's fun.
When they're done with their role-playing.
Should I say I don't actually believe in the Slaterisms that come out of his mouth?
You want to get on the record as saying that you're not pro-Slater's attitude?
I feel like I might have.
For any future Mrs. Bitsenhoffers out there?
You should meet them at a swimming competition.
Yeah, you gotta drown in a pool. It's like Mr. Belding.
The next sketch is Kelly having to tell Zach that she wrecked his car, and Zach.
Well, I want to say, I really noticed this. It was really funny to me that they're about to do the scene. You know, they're like, "Okay, Kelly fucked up Zach's car," and Kelly really like takes a minute to get into character. Did you see that?
She's an actress, Ryan.
There's just kind of like a second where she like puts her head down and takes a breath, and like she kind of puts her hands on her legs, like, "Okay, scene." You know, I don't know, I just thought that was a funny moment.
Yeah, she's very committed to her roles, this whole experiment. Like, Kelly Kapowski is just 100% method on board.
Yeah.
She touches Screech a lot.
She even touches Screech. Ugh.
But before the scene starts, like, Zach does his token, oh, we're going to do a scene, I'm just going to make out with Kelly kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And I think he does it throughout this whole skit. And the only weird, like, it's, yeah, Zach's acting horny and I guess whatever. Kelly never really rebuffs him at all. She's just kind of like, yeah, I guess if this is what the role calls for, I'll...
No, Kelly is straight up into getting porked by Zach as part of this project. Like, she never offers any resistance to it, and by the end, she's totally into it.
Yeah.
She's a method actor.
Yeah. She's doing the Daniel Day-Lewis method.
Yeah, I think it's funny how Zach just straight up tries to sex in front of the whole class.
Yeah, right, everyone.
And Mr. Belding's like, this is a good experiment.
He always stops them, though.
No, he does. Well, that's the other thing I have to say about this episode, is Zach gets cock-blocked by everyone in this episode.
Oh, straight up.
This time he's got a bad Kelly, and he's just got cock blockers coming at him from every direction.
Yeah, the line is, so Kelly, they're play acting, she wrecked his car, and Zach's like, whatever, I'm horny, let's do it. And Belding says that, tells Zach that affection does not solve all problems, and Zach's like, it does mine.
Zach, I've done something terrible.
Who cares? Kiss me.
Zach, affection does not solve all problems.
Solves mine.
Right again.
Zach's like, let me do my thing, man.
He's like, quit cock blocking me, Beldo.
And then Kelly backs off, and Zach's like, what, are you just going to leave me with the heart on?
And I love that even in their role play, the setup is still misogynistic. It's Zach's car that Kelly wrecks. It's not her car or the family car. It's Zach's car.
Women drivers.
Am I right? Am I right?
David, what would you do in that situation?
I'd tell her to put on something cute and move it into the kids.
Fair enough.
Why are you driving a car when you be cooking me a meal?
Well, because women can't ride bicycles. It's too stimulating on their vaginas.
Thanks for cleaning that up.
I don't know if I can cover for you guys anymore.
Do you not like being the only woman anymore on this audience?
I might just need to take a walk and let you all have your statements without like me making it okay.
What would it be like if you ever aren't here 1 week?
It just evolves into a series of grunts.
The title of that episode will be Bitches Ain't Shit, but Hoes and Tricks. We'll have Dr. Dre on that week.
So then the third couple, number three, takes their place. And this was basically what? That Screech has lost his job and Lisa's supposed to comfort him and Lisa mm-hmm. could give a fuck. And
yeah, she really doesn't participate in the role playing at all.
Once again, fuck it, fake it for the grade, Lisa.
Yeah, I know.
Would you want to roleplay marriage with somebody who you hate? You two over there, roleplay marriage right now.
What they like? You
don't tempt him, Carol! Don't tempt him!
Whoa, what's going on?
Wow, we just saw some shit.
Just needed permission.
So basically, the climax of their scene is Lisa saying that she's allergic to Screech because she's getting all twitchy and itching herself. And Belding, for some fucking reason, is like, yeah, I think you are allergic to him.
I think we're getting ahead of ourselves. Back to me and Austin role-playing marriage.
Yes, thank you.
Austin, affection solves all my problems, too.
Well, get in that kitchen and make me some dinner.
Put on something cute.
So, Austin.
Yeah.
David just crashed your car. What do you do?
Tell him to buy me a new fucking car.
Marry somebody or pretend to marry somebody for a school grade. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, no, you're totally right. This is a ridiculous project. Yeah,
there's two reasons to marry someone.
Money.
Citizenship.
Money and citizenship.
Those are the reasons.
A good grade in social studies is not one of those two things.
No, it's true.
What about out of political alliance?
That's fine.
That's
you're talking over my head. But wait, I had a couple things to say about this. Oh, well, I mean, I think saying she's allergic to Screech is just a way of simplifying that she's developing, like, a nervous condition by being around him. But I also thought it was interesting because the actress Lark Voorhees does, in fact, go crazy in real life later on.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that just was in the news recently.
That was an interesting foreshadowing. And also, I wonder how responsible was Dustin Diamond?
Probably highly.
I feel like she was one of the best actors on the show, though, actually.
Yeah, but she went nuts, man.
Apparently.
Send me the links. I think I've seen her be nuts, but not that nuts.
Yeah. I think we watched them one time.
Yeah,
but I do agree with Austin that like Mr. Belling just buys into this whole allergic thing. Like, you can be allergic to a person.
Right. If Belding was just like, you know, oh, this clearly isn't working out, I have to annul this marriage, it'd be one thing, but he's like, yeah, I think you are allergic to him. And I'm like, you're not a medical doctor, Belding, and that's fucking stupid.
And this whole allergic to Screech thing never comes up again, shockingly.
Right.
It also really goes against, sort of, the whole thing is about, like, learning to compromise and deal with situations and, You know, it kind of goes against all of that.
Which is kind of bullshit anyways, because it's like, we're going to force two people together. Now you best damn compromise.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, like, Screech and Lisa never would have gotten married in real life, so they never would have had to learn to compromise in a relationship anyway. But
it's true. You'd think that if it was like diagnosed, like, oh, you're allergic to Screech, like, maybe he shouldn't be one of the five people that you spend all of your time with.
Yeah. True.
You shouldn't continue to spend all of your time around him.
The end result of all of this is that Belding is forced to annul couple number three's marriage. And,
wait, are we to assume then that they never had sex?
I guess so. I guess that's what we have to take from that.
It's disappointing.
He can safely annul it. And the our very first Screech cry takes us into the commercial break.
What?
I was going to say that. That was the first one, right?
Yep.
Does he cry a lot? Good.
That's his cry. That's his thing.
Yeah. After the commercial, we come back, and our new title cryon tells us that it is time for the firstborn. And Belding says, in the past, they did this with flour sack kids, but because Screech and Lisa broke up, now he can give the remaining two couples teenagers instead of infant baby sacks. So Screech becomes Kelly and Zach's son, and Lisa becomes Slater and Jesse's daughter.
I hate to beat a dead horse here, but first of all, so the only reason they got teenagers was because Lisa and Screech broke up. It's not like he could have plucked the 15 other students in the class to be teenagers. And secondly,
you guys
because
have to still just stand there and watch.
You're not part of the experiment.
Yeah, and because of the marriage dissolved, it's not like he could have had a third marriage then come in from these other students that aren't allowed to speak. Or
this is straight up the Golden Sixes project, and no one else is involved.
That's the social science. Social science is about how some people are just what everything is about, and you have to just sit and watch. There's a lot of disturbing shit in this episode. I think we can all agree.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of hair-raising stuff. But when they open the door to see that Screech is their kid, and he looks at Kelly and says, "What a hot mommy." That's a record-breaking, upsetting moment.
I think I'll see that in my pink-rimmed nightmare tonight. Yeah.
Freud's head just exploded.
Yeah, and so they're supposed to be teenagers, but Screech plays this very adolescent, and the gross thing is that everybody lets him, and that they're pressured to, like, coddle this man baby, adolescent. He's like an adult baby, but he's a teen adult baby.
Well, it's weird because he's supposed to be simulating being the exact age he is.
Well, he's not doing it good.
Yeah.
And then Kelly is like pressing his head up against her breast too, which is
Yeah,
you're right, it's a good point. Like, he's supposed to be a teenager, but he acts like he's like 7 or 8 years old. And once again, much like how he doesn't respect Lisa's boundaries, he's the one who takes this like way too far. And even outside of the class, he's pretending like Slater or like that Zach is his dad, and Lisa is the daughter of this other couple. And
well, there's a scheme involved.
Well, right. So yeah, that's our next scene is in the bathroom because that's one of the only other sets we have.
Right. Also, don't you think that Screech just wants Zach to be his mom and Kelly to be his dad? Reverse that.
No, I thought you were going like next level on me for a second, and I was.
Well, no. If someone's going to be your mom and dad, you'd want it to be couple number one, right?
Yeah, and it's like, you know, I could be couple number three, or I could be baby number one, and he's just really ready to take that new family.
You got into a better family, but yeah, writing Lisa's name in toothpaste is really also disturbing.
I don't think it's toothpaste.
Spot the ejaculate.
Go taste the next scene.
Yeah, so they're in the bathroom, and Slater and Screech are discussing the end of Screech's marriage, and Slater basically, without coming out and saying it, tells Screech that if he breaks up Zach and Kelly's quote-unquote marriage, Slater will order Lisa to date Screech.
I feel like they do this bit a lot, where Screech gets all up in Slater's space, like he starts kind of pushing him and getting forceful with him, and then he realizes that Slater can kick his ass. They've done that before, haven't they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did they do it with Slater, or did they do it with, was it Screech and Needick?
Well, that was a whole different.
Screech does it a lot, he just gets ahead of himself, you know?
Yeah, no, you're right.
Yeah, he does have boundary issues.
Yeah, that's true.
No, I just, was amazed by how quickly Screech decided to screw over Zach just to get Lisa, I guess.
Yeah, well, it makes sense. It's within his character.
I suppose.
Everybody wants to destroy their father, right?
Yeah, yes.
Ah, how Oedipal.
Yeah, except he doesn't want his own mom. He wants
He could have had his own mom, wasn't he?
Yeah, that's true. Did you notice that Screech bent the laws of physics again? Like, when he was in the filing cabinet, now he goes in one stall and then comes out the other?
Yeah.
And Slater kind of gives a what-the-fuck look when he does that.
Yeah, I noticed.
Yeah. I'm glad you did, Ryan. That's important.
Thank you.
So did you also like how Slater says, oh, I can force Lisa to date you. And Screech is like, well, she's not going to listen to you. This is, you know, you just said this isn't real life. And he's like, yeah, but she wants a good grade, and that's real. And first of all, it's really not that much more real, Slater. Like, your fucking grade on this high school social science project is not real in the grand scheme of things. Second of all, if she wanted a good fucking grade, she probably shouldn't have broken up with Screech in the first place.
Yeah, that's true.
Or, you know, maybe it was worth it to her to take the bad grade and not have to pretend to be married to his scary, weird stalker.
Right, totally understandable.
No, I don't know why you'd do that, but but if you were to go to such an extreme, like, no, I guess I'll just take an F and avoid a stalker, like, whatever. But why would she then decide to date for the good grade?
Right, that's what I was going to say.
Why would she do the 180?
If Lisa was like, fuck my grade, it's not worth it, I could get behind that, but then she has no reason to listen to Slater.
Looks like a real logical phrase.
Yeah, no, she's already, that's true. She's already kind of thrown in the towel on the project to get away from Screech.
I feel like Saved by the Bell isn't big on logic.
Is it just
it's taken you 11 episodes to notice that?
Well, I like how there'll be like a scheme and then a further development of a scheme, and it just kind of makes less and less sense as it goes.
It starts from a place of poor sense and it just gets worse.
Well, there's never any hindsight. They never go like, well, that didn't work, so this won't work either. They just keep moving forward with it, you know?
Next scene is back, of course, in the classroom, and the title card tells us it's time for the surprise, which apparently is about dealing with the unexpected. Zach is still horny, and Screech cockblocks him, because that's what happens. And Kelly tells him that they're going to have a second child, I guess. And Zach is less than enthusiastic about that.
Yeah, why? He's not really having a second child.
He's been the only one that's done a good job of being like, fuck it, I'll just say whatever for the thing. This is like the imaginary second child takes it too far for him.
He's like, I can't handle this.
Now, what was a big surprise for me?
I'm gonna have another baby.
Oh, great. That's all I need to Screech part two.
Yeah, he totally breaks character at one point when she's like, we're going to have another baby. He's like, well, that's fucking great. I'm never going to get laid now. And long story short, Zach and Kelly break up because nobody can fake this for a grade.
Well, but wait, we talk about genuinely funny moments, and the one where he has to tell Screech he loves him.
Your father loves you, don't you, Zach? Tell him.
I love you. Screech.
You're just saying that to get close to mommy. I know dad.
That's a pretty great delivery where he's like, I love you, Screech. That was pretty funny to me.
So yeah, this is where Screech is clutching her breast and just like being like, mommy, daddy doesn't love me. Daddy, fix my bike. And you just being total cock block. And is that just kind of everybody's nightmare of parenthood? Is that why we don't have children?
Well, I had a roommate like that one time.
That was cock blocking you?
Yeah, you guys never had a cock-blocking roommate?
No, not really.
I've had several.
Do I count as my own roommate?
Cock-blocking yourself?
Not intentionally.
David, we're really learning a lot.
We're cracking open that skull and feasting on the goo inside.
You're learning things you can't unlearn. I'm sorry about this.
I got dibs on the what did you learn this episode.
Later on, I'm going to be ranking you all by who's a good husband.
Oh, are you?
No.
Who's couple number one? Yeah, who's... But I also really like the moment where Zach, he goes, Mr. Belding, Screech is acting like a jerk.
And Belding's basically like, yeah, you little fucks are jerks sometimes.
Mr. Belding, Screech is acting like a jerk.
Well, teenagers are often annoying one minute and perfect angels the next. You should know that.
It's all part of the experiment. Keep going.
I keep getting taken aback by just how seriously everyone's taken this project and how no one can just fake their way through. It wouldn't be that difficult, people.
No, it's just five class periods of acting out scenarios and keeping your cool.
Yeah.
It's not difficult.
I think the problem with Zach is that he's so determined to make out with Kelly in front of everyone.
Yeah, he wants to prove himself.
Yeah. He's determined to make out with Kelly, period. The circumstances are irrelevant.
Yeah.
They're both slightly exhibitionistic. They're exhibitionists. Actor, game show host.
Mm-hmm.
They want to perform with their lovemaking.
It's true. They want everyone to watch them have sex.
Kelly certainly seemed on board with making out with Zach in front of everybody. But
yeah, she would have done it.
She's the cunt. She's ready to go. She's got to get started on her big Kelly brood.
Yeah, you do have to wonder, in light of the fact that these two characters do end up getting married, how much their married life resembled the play acting in this episode.
I know, it's too bad they never made a series out of them being married.
Yes, too bad.
It's really too bad.
So we go into our second commercial break with Zach all worried that if he can't stay married to Kelly, she'll never go out with him. Wah, wah.
Yeah, that's logical.
Yep. So we come back from commercial, and it's a role-playing dinner at the Slater-Spano household. And Slater is laying it on thick with his best dad impression to try to impress Kelly. And Screech shows up, and he's going to take Lisa out for a date. And she's basically like, fuck no, I'm not going out with Screech. And within a matter of about 15 seconds, this whole Machiavellian Slater-Screech plan just completely falls apart. Like, literally the instance that Lisa comes into it, it's just like, wait, you fucking promised me to him? You promised who to what? You guys are terrible.
It was such a solid plan, too.
How did it come to this?
Well, to be fair, it became quite clear that Slater had no real intention of getting Screech a date with Lisa. She said no, and he's like, I did the best I could.
Like, how did Slater expect this to end?
Which was fine, but then suddenly Screech was not happy with this arrangement of did the best I could, and that's
any
when
arrangement where the catalyst is writing someone's name in toothpaste on a mirror, it's usually not going to work out.
Again, there's not that much evidence that it was toothpaste.
How much evidence was there that it wasn't toothpaste?
Pretty much everything we've ever seen.
Voodoo, stalkers, and bodily colors.
That's a lot of fluid to come out, that's all I'm saying.
I agree.
You don't think he's backed up? He regularly exercises.
He's like 15, man.
Yeah, I suppose. He just has to wait a couple minutes and then he's ready to go again.
So the next scene is in they remember that they have a Belding's office set. So the next scene is in Belding's office, where he basically tears into the male Golden Three, not happy that they have made a mockery of mock marriage.
You have made a mockery out of mock marriage.
Which is a clever line, but then Arrested Development did it even better.
Job, I'm not going to turn this mock trial into some kind of... You were going to say mockery, weren't you? I was in trouble like three words into that.
I think Arrested Development did everything better relative to Saved by the Bell.
I know, but it was good.
Their Casey Kasem wasn't that good.
Yeah,
that's true.
And I like how Mr. Belly makes the point that you can't bring personal rivalries into this project, but, like, we're talking about marriage, aren't we?
Yeah, he really shames them. It's maybe the biggest he's shamed three people at once.
Yeah.
Well,
he's pissed that his experiment's like failing, I think.
They all did act like shitty jerks.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true, but that's not unique to this episode, though, so I don't know why they get addressing down now. And
that's true.
Well, because Mr. Belding, it was his project.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. He's pissed that his experiment's failing, and he probably had a lot riding on it.
This is true. So next scene is we're at the Max, and it's time for the anniversary dinner.
Oh, yeah, I guess. Sorry.
Now, you got anything else for that scene?
Yeah, well, at the end of it, Zach and Slater seem very concerned about repairing their fake marriages.
Right.
Well, because Belding tells them that it's up to the girls to kind of decide, you know, how this is going to pan out. Well, I mean, and is it because it's a project? I mean, are they just concerned about their grades or what is happening?
They seem generally concerned about their mock marriages, I guess. I don't know. Whole episode's ridiculous.
What?
I think they just had to throw in the idea of women having choice with marriage at the end.
Wait, what?
So, yes.
Well, that'd be a lesson Slater doesn't learn by the end. But
that's for damn sure. So it's our final scene, and we're at the Max, and it's time for the anniversary dinner. And Max tells Belding that he can think of the Max as another classroom.
Which he always has done, and yep, always will do.
Which they kind of did that already. And the Max is, it's all gussied up, so it kind of looks like a slightly fancier restaurant than normal.
And I think we should point out that, according to the first scene, this is a Friday night, and Max decided to shut down the restaurant just for a school project.
That's well, just... it's not like he has people coming on Friday night. It's only school kids. I like how Jesse and Lisa come in.
And the audience hoots.
We all go hoot at their outfits.
Yep.
And then Max tries to escort them over, and Jesse won't link arms with him.
Mm. Yeah, and that's one of those...
Why did you link arms with the Max?
Well, because he's just supposed to be, like, escorting her to the table kind of thing.
I've never been escorted to the table by a waiter.
Well, you clearly have not gone to fancy enough restaurants, then.
Like the Max.
Have you ever had a waiter who's also the owner of the place show you magic tricks?
No.
Well, think about that, maybe.
Now, all right. Okay, let's be fair, Carol, here. No matter where you are, you see Ed Alonso, you're going to want to link arms with him, right?
True.
If I had to touch somebody in this scene, he is one of the more ones I would touch.
You heard it here, folks. Carol has the hots for Max.
Oh, she wants to fuck him bad.
I want to see his sleight of hand. It wasn't that good. It almost was. I'll come back with that.
Did you also like how Slater's idea of dressing up is putting on a bolo tie?
Yes, I did.
He's a great guy.
He's a real catch, ladies.
So everybody's kind of dressed like it's prom. The girls are in dresses, and Slater has, a collar and a bolo, and I don't know, what it does remind people of, prom or, like, a marriage commitment promise ceremony?
I was thinking more, it's not as extravagant, I guess, as prom. I was thinking more homecoming.
Yeah, it's kind of homecoming-ish.
Maybe, like, homeschool prom.
Yeah.
Like prom on a farm.
Prom.
And I love that, I love that Lisa, or I forget if it was Lisa, somebody asks Max, like, what's on the menu, and I'm like, the same damn thing that's on it every other day that you're there?
Well, then he pulls a duck out of the menu.
She asks what the most expensive thing on the menu is, and then he says, oh, then it's the duck! And of course, he shows a duck, which is at least consistent with the entire series that Max always has a bird on hand for whatever the occasion may call for.
Do you think that's Becky the duck?
Oh, no, it can't be Becky.
Yeah, right. She's not covered in oil.
Well, this is before that. Oh, you'll see.
It's the saddest episode of TV ever.
I think I'm aware of it now. It's an oil spill. I've seen it. I've seen them all, like, half of them. I don't know. but is there a joke there? When Max pulls a duck out of the menu and he's like, this is expensive.
Well, because
is there a joke?
Because
they could have done something with the bill.
Oh.
Is there a joke?
Are you really saying asking? The shitty wordplay wasn't shitty enough?
I'm saying there wasn't shitty wordplay.
You know what I would have liked?
No, you're right, Carol. They passed up that opportunity for a pun. The joke was basically like, look at Max, he's pulling a duck out of nowhere. Isn't that hilarious?
Well, I mean, duck is typically an expensive item on a menu.
Well, no, yeah, I get that.
Lobster.
Oh, you should have pulled a lobster out.
That would have been something.
What I would have liked is if he had pulled the duck out, and then Lisa was like, yeah, I'll have the duck, and he just started murdering it.
Plucking its feathers. And
yeah. He rips the head off.
Yeah.
Now, that would have been comedy. Yeah, if he just bit his head off.
Ozzy Osbourne started playing.
Yeah, that could have been a really good scene.
Let's redo that scene.
Okay, I'm for it.
All right, so the Slater-Jesse conversation turns into another discussion of gender politics, and to no one's surprise, Slater is still a giant misogynist ass. Well, he wants to order for Jesse, and which is like a dumb fucking thing anyway.
Yeah, I've always been...
Why would somebody want to do that?
That's what they did, like, in the 40s.
I know. Yeah, there's a couple things going on here. A, I've never even understood it in the 40s. Like, why do you want to decide? Like, I guess I can understand in the antiquated 40s mentality, like, I'm the man, I should speak with the waiter. She's too fragile to handle, like, speaking with strangers. And so then he'll order what she wants. But I've always assumed that, like, the woman had told him prior, like, oh, the fish looks good or something, and then he...
Yeah, he doesn't care what she wants to eat. He's like, you're having a hamburger. I thought maybe he was just really low on cash.
That could have been it. He needed to get his cheap-ass burger order in before Jesse ordered the lobster.
And I feel like choosing for your wife seems like a recipe for disaster anyways. Like,
oh, totally.
As soon as you're like, she'll just have a salad, then you're already in the doghouse at that point, right? I can neither confirm nor deny it. I said dressing on the side, and that's about the end there.
Well, but why would you want to do that as a man? What does it prove for you? It's like, I am so cool that I know in your brain what you want to eat.
No, I don't get it. I've never understood that trope.
I think it's just about, like, wholly owning someone, you know? Like,
I guess.
You sit there, here's what you eat, here's the things that you do, mama.
Men sure don't like it when women have options.
Yeah, I guess. And the ironic thing about that whole mentality is, like, with Slater, he wants her to move it into the kitchen, where assuming she's cooking meals every day, so she chooses what they eat every other day, but now she can't, I guess.
You know, he's going to tell her what he wants to eat. She's going to make it, or he's going to punch her in the face.
That sandwich better be good.
So they ultimately, Slater and Jesse agree that people like them should never get together, which completely flies in the face of season two.
Right, but also they have a surprisingly rational conversation given everything we've seen.
Yes, they basically are like, no, I just don't think we're compatible. We, you know, you're a misogynist pig and I'm a normal person. And
then Mr. Belding seems to be like, you guys learned a valuable lesson, even though the entire time he's trying to teach them that the only way they get an A is by compromising and staying together.
Yeah.
And if there's one place to compromise, it's not in matters of love. That's not what he should be grading them for. And I have two lines of Slater's that I found strange.
Okay, so what's that?
He's sitting down to his daughter and his wife in this role, and he says, you both look dynamite. Oh, and Lisa, I hope you'll forgive me for promising you to screech. So it's just
nice.
You know, both my ladies looking good. Sorry about the fake marriage betrothal, selling you in the toilet, and the guy you hate to your stalker.
Honey, you look great. I'm sorry I tried to whore you out. Please forgive me.
Very smooth.
Just remember, if you have a daughter and she gets dressed up for a date, tell her she looks dynamite.
Two dynamite ladies. And then Ryan touched on this, but I just want to explicitly say that Slater says...
I think she said Ryan agrees with everything Slater has done so far in this episode.
Ryan, you cock blocker.
Slater says, Jesse Spano, if you keep this up, I'm going to punch you to the moon.
Yeah.
He says, one of these days, send you to the moon. And it's like a fist, and they're playing off these old sitcoms, but it is spousal abuse.
Yeah, there's nothing is more hilarious than spousal abuse, clearly.
I always thought that was amazing that the whole honeymooner's recurring gag is that he's threatening to punch his wife.
I know, that's totally one of those things where, like, you think about that now, and you're just like, that was a thing that no one thought twice of back then. And
I bet he ordered for his wife.
This is a really troubling episode.
No, it totally is. Like, it's just deeply disturbing. So then a smoking hot Kelly comes into the Max.
And I'd like to point out it was very convenient that Jesse showed up first, and then they went through all their stuff. And then after that had finished, Kelly walks in.
Right,
the staging is a little artificial. I will say, maybe I'll take back what I said about that Alyssa Milano tape in regards to Kelly here. Because goddamn.
Yeah, she's looking pretty good in this dress.
Yeah, opposed to all the other times when she's looking awful.
I know. So I love it. This is, again, one of those, like, subtle commentaries that was totally unintentional, but basically Zach does all the things to Kelly that pissed Jesse off when Slater did them for her. Like, he pulls out her chair, he walks her to the table. I don't think he orders for her, but he probably would have.
He didn't get a chance to order.
Yeah. So they talk about having...
get screwed out of it.
Oh, yeah, because they're going to eat Screech's head.
This episode is so upsetting, and by the ending, I was just like, did I eat acid? Or
no. There's a really weird moment also.
The whole thing is a really weird...
Yeah. There's a few weird moments. But there was a line that I didn't even get where, because I guess they've been estranged for a little while, Kelly and Zach. They haven't seen each other.
Right.
And Kelly's like, what have you been doing? And Zach says he's been watching Brady Bunch reruns. What is that even supposed to mean?
And she laughs like it's a joke. You always made me laugh.
Yeah, and the audience laughs. But, like, what is the joke?
I think he's trying to use the Brady Bunch as a guide to how to have a better marriage.
Is it?
Well, the short answer is no.
Well, yeah, what are you asking? Is it a good guide to a better marriage? No. Is that what they're going for?
Maybe.
Yeah,
is it supposed to be funny? Probably not.
I just genuinely don't even understand what that was supposed to mean.
I'd like to go back to Carol's statement about taking acid.
Uh-huh.
And how I think perhaps after we finish all these episodes, we then start back from the beginning, but we all trip on acid for every episode.
Maybe just when we watch Hawaiian stuff.
Or the Screech porn.
Oh yeah, I guess we are going to end up watching that.
So yes, as Carol alluded to, Zach and Kelly reconcile. They talk about kids. Zach's basically like, I'll say whatever it takes so that I can finally fucking make out with you for like 30 seconds.
One of the few realistic things in the episode.
Right, right. And then Max comes out and he lifts up the serving dish and, oh, look at that, Screech's head's under the table.
Oh my god. And he's like, Daddy! Daddy! Right?
But, yep, and
so why was he under the table and he didn't come in like Lisa? Do we know?
Just for the gag of lifting up the dish and his head's under there.
So he's... Screech bending time again, or is there, did Max cut a hole in one of his
teeth? No, there's a hole. You can see, like, there's, like, a plant, and then they, like, sort of scoot it over when they put the dish on there. So Screech is just under the table the whole time.
Yeah,
cut up one of his tables.
Yeah, Max is willing to destroy one of his tables in order for a stupid... Remember, because Max will do anything for a ridiculous entrance.
I mean, let's be honest here, guys. Max probably already had a table with a hole in it for some other dumbass trick, and he just trotted it out for this one.
He's like, I already made a fucking giant cake for him to jump out of. What's a hole on a table?
Exactly.
You guys, what does Max do with that hole after
that? I'm glad Carol's the one that went there.
I do love that sometimes Carol is the dirtiest one of us all.
No, not sometimes.
Yeah, she's really the one who made the toothpaste connection there.
I have a keen mind.
And in any group that contains David, someone else being the dirtiest one is an impressive feat.
True.
Carol is fucked up.
I draw a lot of dicks.
And this is the point where Zach and Kelly have reconciled, and we get the gag with Screech, and Zach's basically like, all right, let's make out. And Kelly's totally like, sweet, let's make out. I'm up for it, too. And then Belding has to come in and cock block him.
He's like, hey, what is going on here?
But Kelly totally was into it. She's like, all right, Zach, let's do it.
She went into this thing.
Because he's been trying to bag her for 11 episodes now, and he was really going to finally make out with her.
Apparently it just took a forced marriage to make it work.
Is there a point in this series where sex, you think that they're having sex? Like
no.
They allude to it?
No,
not even in the college years.
Really
bad. Yeah, not even in the college years, it's true.
Weird.
There's not even, like, no one even ever gets to second base on this show.
Oh, wait, do viewers count?
A chaste kiss on the lips is as far as anything ever gets.
Yeah, true, even in the college years.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty...
semen on the mirror, writing some of your friend's name and throwing semen.
Oh, yeah, we're not counting semen.
And a big
tank. There's always ejaculate somewhere in the episode, right?
Yeah.
So long story short, Belding announces that everyone's passed.
Well, the six...
everyone, the Golden Six have passed. And...
But there's a special code in Bayside for when Belding has to go clean up semen.
It's a code C.
God, those fucking kids, not again.
I'm confused. So did the other kids in the class get grades for this?
Like, Belding's like, class, you watched the six of them roleplay this really well. You all passed too.
They all have to watch. They all have to write like a 30-page paper.
that random black dude's writing a paper about how Jesse and Slater never would have worked as a couple.
That's my favorite extra.
And Belding's going to put it all in a file, and he's going to peruse it at his ledger.
In the file cabinet, yeah.
And so, yeah, right before we close, we get one last disturbing image, which is Kelly telling Zach that, that second child I told you about, it was a girl, and she lifts up the dish again, and now it's Screech in a little baby bonnet and a wig, and he's like, da-da!
So the final emasculation.
Yes, and that's the image we freeze on as the music plays us out.
And
I hated that.
There's so much to love.
There's a lot to endure in this episode, and I feel like Saved by the Bell, you think about it, and you're like, that's a normal show. And then you watch it, and it is not a normal show.
No. When do you ever think it's a normal show, though?
When it was on when I was a kid, I was like, that's what being a teenager is going to be like.
No, I totally, when I watched it, like, as a preteen, I was like, oh, this is what being a teenager is going to be like. And I was wrong.
You guys are a couple of rubes.
No, look, seriously.
I never had such delusions of grandeur, that's for damn sure.
Ryan, my entire life has been the expectation that it will eventually be like what's on TV, and I'm continually disappointed when it's not.
Oh yeah, didn't you think you were going to grow up to be He-Man?
Yes, I did. See, I thought it was going to be like TV.
Well, it's not too late. You could go back to school.
Get my degree in He-Man.
Go to He-Man school.
It's just you like clown college.
Yes, go to the
ostentatious. I think life should be the stage eternal, and but this episode I don't
You don't want to live on this stage, is
yeah,
that?
No, this episode is kind of fucked. This was never one of my favorites. It's just kind of there.
I think it's an outstandingly bad episode, like in a good way.
It is one of the worst episodes, that's for sure.
You mean, but I mean, how do you mean?
No, I agree with you. Like, it's one of the worst episodes in an entertaining way. Like, yeah. It's just so deeply disturbing that it's kind of fun to watch.
It's not like Malibu Sands bad, where you can barely watch it. It's, like, greatly bad.
It's really bad, but at least there's something going on. I worry that, you know, it's racy. I worry that when it gets Malibu bad, however that is, it's going to be really bland.
Yeah, no, there's some pretty great stuff to point out in the Malibu Sands episodes, so we're going to have a good time with those.
There's a lot of, like, interesting class discussions in those episodes, and
yeah. And also, it's always really cold on the beach.
It does always look really fucking cold on that beach.
Yeah. Small dicks.
Shriveled dicks and pointy shirts.
So, what did everybody learn this week? David, what did you learn this week?
Well, I would say I learned just how committed Bayside is to solely educating 6 students, but I think I already knew that. So I think what I really learned was that the woman's movement was really just about putting on something cute and moving it into the kitchen.
And C-Money, what did you learn this week?
I learned that when you are divorced, you go back into being somebody else's dependent child, unless you were always a nobody, and in which case, who cares?
I can second that.
Yeah. I learned way too much about David's personal life.
Welcome to Austin's world.
And I learned that affection does solve all problems, at least as far as Zach is concerned.
So yeah, again, so Austin, being the only married guy.
Yeah.
How would you compare this project to married life in real life?
Well, okay, the whole idea that you have to, like, compromise and shit, like, yeah, that's true, that's important to marriage, but nothing that they do in the actual execution of the project is in any way, shape, or form like real marriage.
Would you say, though, that if you modeled your marriage more off of the marriages in this episode, that you would benefit?
The number one marriage.
Number one marriage.
Maybe in the short term, but I think they all end in disaster.
Well, like, if you made out with your wife in front of a bunch of people all the time...
Probably depends on the people.
Yeah. How attractive they are?
Yeah,
I can see that. Do you and your wife have fights like Slater and Jesse's fights?
No, we really don't.
Have you ever told her?
But that's true. I've also never told my wife to put on something cute and move into the kitchen.
Never?
Never.
How long have you been married?
Coming up on, oh, let's see, 2007, so that's be 7 years in September.
Wow, well, I hope that she recognizes that quality in you, that you haven't done that.
Yeah, you should show this episode to her and be like, whenever things are a little rocky, remember, I'm not Slater.
That's did you propose to her by just moving into her room with your stuff?
Yeah, she was doing, like, some workout video, and I just walked in and was like, hey, babe, we're living together now.
So
did Mr. Belding come to your house and just tell you guys that you're married now?
He officiated our wedding ceremony.
So
you guys were matching smocks that say husband yes. number 1, wife number 1.
What rank are you?
What was that, Carol?
What's your husband rank?
Oh, we're totally 1 and 2.
1 and 2, so you're supposed to be 1 and 1.
Yeah. Oh, I suppose, yeah, you're right. We're the first couple.
When you order her food, have you ever ordered an improper meal for her?
No, seriously, the whole ordering food for a woman thing, this is where I'm just like, I couldn't even fathom doing it, because my first thought would be like, I don't fucking know what she wants. Like, how am I supposed to pick a food for her? She'd look at me and be like, I don't want a fucking burger, I wanted this chicken sandwich or something. It's
One of you has a penis, the other doesn't. The penis knows what everybody wants.
I guess. I just, that's.
And one of us is married and one of us is not.
Wow.
Is the show making me dumber?
Well, I think it's making us all dumber.
One can only hope.
Do you have any more advice about marriage or reactions to the way it seems on the show?
You agree with everything that went on in this episode except the ordering of food. Is that true?
Yeah, I don't think that's true at all. I think that's a gross oversimplification of my perspective. No, to say, I'll put it this way. This episode's representation of marriage is about as realistic as this show's representation of everything else in life.
Like of high school?
Yeah, exactly. It's as accurate about marriage as it is about high school.
All
right. Did your wife ever get allergic to you?
If she did, she kept it to herself. I was never made aware of it.
Oh, that's really nice of her.
That was. I appreciated that. Ignorance is bliss and all that.
Does this explain why she takes a Claritin every morning?
I mean, maybe it does. Maybe it does.
Ignorance is Miss Bliss.
Hi-oh.
On that note.
Good, I don't even know anymore.
So yeah, that's our episode, folks. You can
Could I just interrupt and say that I'm actually not a misogynist?
That's true.
I promise.
That's true. I can vouch for David. He genuinely is not a misogynist, contrary to everything he said in
everything
this episode.
Everything I say ever.
Well, I'm not racist.
But he is single.
Yeah, I'm not a misogynist, but I'm single.
That's true.
Enjoy that humor.
That part is true, ladies. Brian is not as racist as he may lead us to believe.
Not as racist as my radio personality.
Or me, either.
I'm not racist. I'm just pointing out how the show is racist.
Are you as dirty as we're supposed to believe, Carol?
Yeah, you guys don't, yeah.
She's drawing, like, she drew this big pile of boobs. But, yeah.
That is indeed a pile of boobs.
She's always doodling while we're doing this.
Good deal, good deal. So yeah.
So am I, but in a different way.
Oh, Jesus.
You're writing Lisa on a bathroom mirror.
And there's no mirror!
You can't see what he does under the table.
I don't want to.
You can't see what he does.
Austin appreciates what I do.
Oh, boy. So, yeah.
How much of this is edited?
Yeah, I'm going to edit some of this crap out. Follow us on Twitter, SBTV_reviewed. We've got a Tumblr page. You can email us, SBTVreviewed@gmail.com. Where can the listeners find you on the internet? Ryan?
I can be found at ohyesverynice.com. That's ohyesverynice.com. That's my website for my illustrations. Also, ohyesverynice is my Twitter handle.
And Carolyn, how about you?
I am Carolyn Main at Twitter and .com. And also, you can buy my joke book, 8-Bit Grown Zone, online at BridgeCityComics.com. Or tweet at me and I will sell you one through the internet.
Magic.
A sketch. Yeah.
And David, how about you?
You can find me at the He-Man's Woman Haters Club. you can find me on Twitter at Dr. Bits, and you can find my writings and Austin's writings at TheRealGentlemanOfLeisure.com.
And, you can follow me on Twitter at Austin Gorton, The Real Gentleman of Leisure, as David said. I also write for Sound On Sight and CapelessCrusader.org. And don't forget to like our Facebook page and drop us a comment there as well. With that said, this is Austin Gorton for Saved by the Bell Reviewed. I'm off to put on something cute and move it into the kitchen.
When I'm torrenting old recordings, internet, it sends a warning, and I don't think it'll download it.